This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to ExpressPros.com to find your location. That's ExpressPros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
74 degrees, going to be hot and muggy for Memorial Day weekend, as it is every Memorial Day weekend. You find me one in New Orleans that wasn't, I'd like to know about it. Highs around 90 or so, chance for showers in the afternoon. Going to be that way till October, hopefully, maybe before that. Maybe in October, maybe not November. We're going to talk about weight loss drugs, and there was a thing going on where the FDA declared a shortage of them and allowed, because these are all patent drugs, right? But they allowed pharmacies to compound them. Well, the order that allowed for that to happen and them have alternate sources for these drugs besides the big pharma companies, two of them expired in April, and for the third one expired yesterday. And the question we have is, what does that mean for prices? The companies, generally speaking, the prices are trending down, but a lot of that had to do with that order from the FDA allowing drugs to be compounded. Now, the president has called out, President Trump has called out weight loss drugs and said that they are priced too high, but the executive order demands that the drug makers cut their prices in the coming months, which is very kind of vague, I guess. It doesn't really spell out anything, as do a lot of executive orders. And it also says, uses phrases like things that they're targeting or looking at or et cetera. Now, somebody's texting and said they pay $38 a month, a female friend at the San Francisco area. If they're paying $38 a month and it's not covered by insurance, they're getting it from somebody named Juan or whatever it is, Juan, give me a name, in an alley. Because they're saying they're crediting President Trump with cutting the price of this, and it's just not true. $38, a female friend in the San Francisco area. Again, that's he said, she said, this and that and the other thing. And I can tell you firsthand, the price of this drug, they're not $38. And the other thing you need to look at is, as far as executive orders, what have they really accomplished? And look, I applaud President Trump for trying to lower the price of these, and I think he understands, although he indelicately called them the fat drugs, but for understanding that that's from a term of an area of return on investment, that's the best money healthcare can spend. Because if you prevent people from getting fat and overweight and obese and developing diabetes, and as I've said, my own story, I've lost close to 100 pounds, and I was definitely pre-diabetic, and I was on the road to diabetes. And but for this weight loss drug, I have no doubt in my mind that I would be diabetic right now. And once you get diabetes, not the one you're born with, but the one you kind of give yourself, you have it for life and you can't get rid of it. So I would then have to have taken this drug for the rest of my life. So ironically, the insurance company is still not paying for it, but the insurance company would have had to pay for it then because I had diabetes. They won't pay for it now, but I took the proactive step of taking the drug and losing the weight before I got diabetes because I didn't want to have it. So with all that being said, part of my reason is because I was spending the same money on the drug as I was at the grocery store. So I figured, well, why not just don't buy the groceries and take the weight loss drug and be healthier? We'll take a quick break, come back, and talk to Anand Parekh, Chief Medical Advisor for the Bipartisan Policy Center, about these weight loss drugs. Early look at traffic now on WWL. 6:22, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Anand Parekh, Chief Medical Advisor for the Bipartisan Policy Center. Talk about Medicare, Medicaid, and new weight loss drugs. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Good to be with you.
Thanks for taking the time. Let's talk about these drugs, because initially the price came down because, before we get to Medicare and Medicaid, just what's going on with them now, the FDA declared a shortage, so they allowed pharmacies to compound the big three weight loss drugs. The order for two of them expired in March, and the order for the third one expired yesterday, I think, did it not? So where does that stand now with the prices of these weight loss drugs for people for whom insurance doesn't cover it?
Yeah, well, you know, the net prices of these drugs are still pretty high. They're about $8,000 to $9,000 annually. If you go outside of insurance, there are ways direct to consumer that some people are able to get this for maybe $500 a month or so.
Yeah, somebody texted in and said $38 a month. I've never heard of that without insurance, unless they're getting it from some guy on a street or something. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and you know, and there is some controversy related to compounding, and I think, you know, people have to be cognizant and vigilant about where they're getting these drugs, and we're seeing, you know, counterfeit products and all. So I think that's a set of issues. The costs are certainly a set of issues. Now, the costs have come down through competition, but not sufficiently for a lot of Americans who can benefit from these drugs.
So I told my story before you came on. I lost close to 100 pounds. I was headed for diabetes. I was knocking on the door of diabetes. And as you well know, once you get it, you can't get rid of it, right? You got it for life. So then the insurance company would have paid for it, ironically, after I got sick, not to prevent me from becoming sick, which makes no sense at all. But I decided to pay for it out of pocket because I didn't want to get diabetes. And secondly, it was a trade-off with what I was spending at the grocery store. Some people don't have that luxury. Let's talk about Medicare, Medicaid, what the government says about that, because I'm just going to lay it out. I can see where, if from return on investment, it's cost effectiveness. However, the best thing you can do is get people, prevent them from being obese and the problems that comes with it. I can also see people saying, wait a minute, are you telling me that I have to be poor to avoid getting diabetes? Take me through all of that, doctor.
Yeah. Well, first off, congratulations to you. Sounds like you've made a lot of progress. Hope you're feeling well.
I feel great.
You know, I was just going to say, Tommy, that you know, we have our healthcare policy in this country backwards. We don't have a prevention-oriented healthcare policy frame of mind, and what we should be doing is trying to prevent, with every evidence-based intervention in our toolbox, prevent these conditions. And so it's a bit backwards, for example, for Medicare right now to cover these drugs if you have obesity-related complications like type 2 diabetes or sleep apnea or cardiovascular disease, but not cover it for obesity itself.
I would think, going through the politics of this, that you're not going to have, politically, you can't have Medicare or Medicaid paying for this if insurance companies don't cover this as a preventative drug. Do you?
You know, it's interesting how it works. Oftentimes, it's Medicare leading what we've seen in the past, and then other commercial insurers following.
Really?
So what Medicare does is actually a big deal. The problem with Medicare is, in most cases, when the FDA says a drug is safe and effective and gives it stamp of approval, in most cases, CMS then looks at it and asks, is it reasonable and necessary for the Medicare population? And in most cases, they say yes. In this specific case, for obesity medications, unfortunately, there's a statutory prohibition that's about 20 years old, at a time when essentially Congress and policymakers considered weight loss drugs as cosmetic. we didn't know back then about obesity actually being a medical condition. We didn't have safe and effective drugs. But because of that prohibition, Medicare today just can't go and cover these drugs. They need Congress's approval. There is bipartisan support, yet that there's a cost to that. Now, the Biden administration tried to reinterpret that statute and say, hey, you know what, we don't need Congress. We can try to do this on their own. They proposed a rule to cover these drugs, but the Trump administration has thus far declined to finalize that rule. So these drugs, if you're on Medicare and have just obesity, you don't have that additional diabetes, cardiovascular disease, or sleep apnea, these drugs are still not covered for Medicare beneficiaries.
All right, so President Trump signed an executive order demanding that drug makers, this is according to Reuters, cut prices on their products in the coming months to hew more closely with what they charge in other developed countries or face new regulations and enforcement actions from export restrictions to tariffs. That sounds great. That's an executive order. But what does that actually mean? You talked about Biden trying to do it without Congress. What can the president do without Congress? And how likely is this executive order to result in lower prices when it comes to the weight loss drugs, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the details are scant, so we don't exactly know how the administration proposes to do that. But there is one opportunity. So this year, Medicare can actually now negotiate the price of certain expensive drugs for which there isn't a lot of competition. So this year, Medicare has included semaglutide, which is the ingredient in Wegovy and Ozempic, on the list of drugs for which Medicare will negotiate the price this year. Now, it won't go into effect for 2 years until 2027, but that's an opportunity to use Medicare to negotiate the price of drugs, and it could very well be that President Trump will want to negotiate that one really hard to try to get down, not all the way to some of the prices in other countries, but at least significantly. So I think we're going to have to wait to see how that all settles out.
I'm not trying to take President Trump's glory away. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I'm not trying to give him anything he doesn't deserve. I'm just trying to keep it factual here. And I think people need to understand there's a lot that needs to happen between the signing of an executive order and anything changing, correct?
That's right. That's absolutely right. I think, everyone wants lower prescription drug costs. Everyone sees the disparities between the United States and other countries. But to actually make that work, everybody's got to have to play ball. So the drug manufacturers have to play ball. Other countries have to play ball. This is also interlocked into tariff policy and other economic policies. So there are a lot of moving parts here. I think everyone wants the same goal, accessibility and affordability of evidence-based drugs. But getting there is not so simple.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to end it, Doctor, because it's obvious, right? Because I said a long time ago, if they ever came up with a real weight loss drug, it wouldn't be a supplement that you had to watch late night TV on cable to find out about. They'd be sounding it from the lighting the beacons to tell everybody, and that's what they're doing with these weight loss drugs. Now the problem is getting the insurance companies to pay for them. Thank you, sir. Dr. Anand Parekh, Chief Medical Advisor for the Bipartisan Policy Center. We'll talk about LSU baseball when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. 6:46, 14 till 8. Finally, LSU baseball gets to play in the tournament. LSU number 3 seed. They're playing number 14, Texas A&M, today here on WWL. Pregame at 6, first pitch 6:30. Scheduled to start then. If the Tigers win tonight, they'll play tomorrow at 3:30, pregame at 3. If they lose tonight, that's it. They're gone. Single elimination. If they are still in a tournament Sunday, they'll play at 2, pregame at 1:30. So we got all the information you need here on WWL. Jeff Palermo joins us, WWL.com, Louisiana Network News Director. He's got a story posted at WWL.com. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm all right. LSU playing Texas A&M. They did play them already earlier this month in College Station and lost the series. Does that mean anything here or not?
Yeah, a little bit different this time around because, LSU's got an opportunity to throw its ace in Cade Anderson because this is the first time they're playing in the SEC tournament, while Texas A&M has already played twice, so they're down a little bit in their pitching. They're going to have to throw their Sunday starter today, so their third best, if you would, starter. So LSU goes into this one with a distinct advantage. They're rested. They're ready to go. Texas A&M is really playing for their NCAA tournament lives. We've talked about it a lot, and anybody that's watched college baseball this year, it's been an unreal season for Texas A&M. They go in ranked number one in the preseason, and they got off to a slow start in non-conference play and got off to an awful start in SEC play, and they've really struggled offensively. They've struggled in the field, and here they are really needing to probably win two more games just to give themselves a chance at an at-large bid for the NCAA tournament. I mean, they finished 11-19 in conference play, and Texas A&M goes into this game without their best home run hitter, their best power hitter. Jace Lavallette, in the win over Auburn yesterday, broke his hand, so he's out. So A&M is, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another for them this season. So LSU goes into this one as the favorites to win, and it would be surprising if they didn't come away with a victory tonight.
Let's talk about the tournament in general, how important that is to LSU with the Super Regional. I think they're pretty well assured of a regional, even if they get bounced from the tournament. Take me through all of that.
Yeah, LSU will certainly be hosting a regional. The question is, will they be hosting a Super Regional? Their RPI going into this week is 8, and that is an important metric that the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee keeps an eye on. In the polls, LSU's ranked number one. I mean, in the human polls, they're ranked number one. When the computer spits it out, they got them in at number 8. And the reason why LSU gets dinged is because of its non-conference schedule, which is ranked like 220th in the country. It's one of the worst in the country. So that hurts them when it comes to the RPI. But even if they did get upset tonight by Texas A&M, I think LSU's in good shape to be a top 8 national seed, which means they would host a super regional if they win their regional. And I say that because they've won 19 games in conference play. You go 19-11 in league play, that should be enough. And history tells you that that's usually enough for you to host a top 8 national seed. But, you know, the other thing is that the SEC is top heavy. You got a lot of teams that are vying or in position to be a top 8 national seed. And so I think one of the things that I worry a little bit about is do the tournament selection committee try to spread it around a little bit and not necessarily pack six teams from the SEC in the top 8 of their bracket. And then it might come back to hurt LSU if they end up losing tonight. But I think they're in good shape, and you know, now let's just go out there and see if you can win a couple games, and who knows, maybe win this whole tournament.
Yeah, I was going to say, you make a point in your story about LSU being a gold standard when it comes to the SEC tournament. We'll talk about that when we come back. Also about how far does LSU have to go in the tournament for you to feel good about them hosting the Super Regional? If they get past Texas A&M tonight, is it different if you get bounced later than tonight? More when we return, 6:50, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:55 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. LSU takes on Texas A&M this evening here on WWL. Jeff Palermo, our guest, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. So, Jeff, I was talking to you about, and look, we're talking about the Super Regional, not to get ahead of ourselves, but
yeah.
First of all, let me take a step back. When it comes to the article you wrote, you talked about LSU being the gold standard when it comes to SEC tournaments. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, they have the best record out of any team in the Southeastern Conference in this tournament. 94-50. They've won a conference high 12 tournament titles. If they can get to the championship game on Sunday, that would be their 21st time that they've played in the SEC tournament championship game. They've been by far the best. For those that have been watching the tournament here over the last 3 days, I think the intensity gets ramped up a notch when LSU gets out there because of the fan base. And I would imagine a lot of LSU fans are probably in their vehicle right now heading out to Hoover, Alabama to hope that LSU's there for the entire weekend. So it's LSU has always played well. Paul Menary's teams had some great runs through this SEC tournament, some wild games, some wild victories. And even last year, LSU had a great run, and when their backs were up against the wall, because if you remember last year, they had a 13-17 conference record, and they were very much on the bubble as far as making the NCAA tournament, but they got all the way to the championship game before eventually losing to Tennessee. So LSU this time only has to win two games to get there. And, you know, tonight should be an interesting test against Texas A&M, again, who's very desperate at this point to try to win this game.
So when it comes to how far LSU going, how far in the tournament would they have to go before being bounced out to affect a super regional? And then I'm going to follow that up. You can answer the same question at the same time, all at once, which is when it comes to managing the roster, you got the regional starting on Friday. Yeah. You don't know when you'll be playing. How do you manage the roster? How important is it to win the SEC tournament or to go deep into it, to get the super regional with an eye toward the future? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's all good questions, Tommy. I think going back to what we were talking about in the last segment, I think LSU's in really good shape. I mean, even if they lost tonight against A&M, I still think they're in position to be a top eight national seed. But winning tonight would certainly secure that even more, and then another victory tomorrow against either Arkansas or Ole Miss would certainly solidify it. As far as how you manage the roster, you know, there was a lot of question earlier this week on whether Jay Johnson would pitch his ace in this first game, or would he make it a bullpen game and save Cade Anderson or Anthony Ianson. But anybody that knows Jay Johnson knows that when he takes his team to the field, he's trying to win that game. There's no, hey, guys, let's just go out there and, you know, throw a few pitches and try not to, you know, catch it and throw it and take a few swings, and then we'll pack it up and go back to Baton Rouge. I think Jay Johnson is hoping and is planning for this team to get all the way to the SEC Tournament Championship game. Now, that being said, he's not going to push it. He's, you know, Cade Anderson's not going to throw 115 pitches today. And if he starts getting into a little trouble, he's gonna pull him. I think in the end, you would love to get at least two games in, meaning that way you get Cade Anderson and Anthony Ianson both out there and starting and keep them on their regular rest so that they don't have a long way off before you get into regionals next week.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time, your opinions as always, and your information. Jeff Palermo, got a column up at WWL.com. He's a WWL.com columnist and Louisiana Network News Director. We come back, we're going to talk money. John Fleming, Louisiana State Treasurer, will talk about if you get a check from the state of Louisiana, it could very well be legit, and it will help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. And we'll have some fun as well. Memorial Day weekend rapidly approaching, and no surprise, it's going to be hot and humid, as it has been, rather, for every Memorial Day weekend that I've ever been here for. If you got a cool one you can remember, I'd love to hear from you. Dr. John Fleming joins us now, Louisiana State Treasurer, to talk about if you get a check from the state of Louisiana, it could very well be legit. How you doing, Dr. Fleming?
Hey, good morning, Tommy. I'm doing great.
Tell me the story. Everybody's got a story. I want to hear yours. How do you go from being a family physician to being the treasurer for the great state of Louisiana?
Well, in a very circuitous way. I actually am still a practicing physician, or at least licensed and board certified, but I don't get to practice like I used to. But I got into business after I began my medical practice and owned still own 32 Subway restaurants. And I had one foot planted squarely in medicine and one in business. And then in 2008, ran for Congress. Elected, served 8 years, then went to the Trump administration, served as deputy chief of staff in the last year of the administration, came back home and said, you know what, I'd love to be treasurer, and launched my campaign, and I've been serving for a year and a half.
What was it like being deputy chief of staff for President Trump in the final year of his first administration?
Well, this is during the pandemic, and it was very busy. It was very difficult. I served on the coronavirus task force with none other than Dr. Fauci. But it was turbulent times, as you know. We had three fences around the White House, National Guardsmen protecting it because of all the riots, the BLM, et cetera. Even the church behind the White House was burned. So we really had our job cut out for us. But it was really a high privilege and honor to serve only 10 steps from the Oval Office in the West Wing of the White House, President Trump, during his first administration. And, of course, I'm so delighted that he's bringing back a great economy and control of our borders now today.
For people that are concerned about President Trump and the way he carries himself and so forth, look, there's a public persona, there's a personal persona. We all are that way. Tell me about personal Trump, President Trump, rather, the man, because I presume you had some up-close and personal interaction with him. For people that are, for whatever reason, terrified of President Trump, explain to them what you saw.
Well, he's both, in person, he's both alike and different than what you see on TV. I flew on Air Force One several times with him. He invited my wife and I to Camp David, where we spent a weekend with others, members of Congress, et cetera. And when you're sitting in an intimate dinner, first of all, he's very, very charming, will charm your socks off, very complimentary, always in control, speaks in low tones, but he's the sort of guy you'd want to hang out and drink beer with.
Seems like he's the kind of person, and I would describe myself like this, Dr. Fleming, where I can be the most charming person in the world, but if you get on the wrong side of me, I can be the biggest jackhole in the world as well. Is that kind of the feeling you get from him or not?
Well, that's what I see.
I'm saying
TV.
That about me. I'm saying that about me now. I'm just saying that's the feeling I get. I wonder if that's the kind of way he is about him, where he can be the most charming person in the world if he wants to be or if he chooses to be. But then again, he can also be a very, let's just say, staunch taskmaster.
Absolutely. I mean, the man, he really can read people very well. He knows or senses how people think, and he knows when to turn on the charm, and he knows when to attack. Mm-hmm. And it's always very, very strategic. And he's, as you know, he's very effective. When he first ran for president, you know, during the primary days when you had, the various candidates up there, Rubio and others, and he just completely slaughtered them verbally, taking them down one by one, and their poll numbers dropped dramatically, and his went up. He just really knows how to use the English language in such a way that's very unique, off-putting to some people, but very, very effective. Everyone can certainly recognize that.
Have you ever seen anybody like him before in public life or private life that you would compare him to?
I think he's unique in history among mankind. I've never seen anyone like him. I've seen people maybe be full of bluster and so forth, but not use it in an effective technique the way he's able to do it.
I was just curious about that. We'll talk about unclaimed property when we come back, which is why we invited you on. But everybody's got a story, Doc. And when I heard about that, I wanted to follow up on that. Dr. John Fleming, Louisiana State Treasurer, 720 Traffic Now, WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Louisiana State Treasurer John Fleming, Dr. John Fleming. So tell me, John, about checks that are going out and unclaimed property and how this is different than maybe things your predecessors have done.
Well, part of my responsibility as State Treasurer is over the agency, which is called Unclaimed Property. It's actually, that's a misnomer, it's unclaimed cash. We don't hold any, physical property. We just own cash. So this could be a bank account that somebody's forgotten about or inherited. Maybe it's a utility deposit. Maybe it's a tax refund that didn't make it to you. Could be a straight inheritance. Could be anything. 1 in 6 Louisianans are owed money by unclaimed property. And that's actually... Well, at any one time, we have $300 or $400 million ready to go out. And we ask people to come to our website, lacashclaim.org, to claim that. But many people don't know about it. They forget about it and don't do it. So we do something annually, and this is going to be the biggest dump that we've ever had. We do a data match through the Department of Revenue. And we've expanded this program tremendously this year. And at the end of this month, May 31st, we're going to be sending 143,000 checks to Louisianans, all across the state and really outside of the state, because there are people from Louisiana who've moved who still are owed money. This is going to be a total, Tommy, of $34 million. Unprecedented. We've never done this to this scale before. And our concern is that, believe it or not, people will oftentimes mistake this for some kind of promotion, and they will throw the envelope away. So please don't do that. Tell your listeners this is real money. It's their money, and it belongs to them, and they should deposit it.
Yeah, because there are so many scams going around. You know, I've been getting one that they've been texting me over and over. First of all, you're not texting anybody, correct?
No. No, so, we don't. We rarely, if ever, reach out in any matter. If anything, it would be a phone call. But in most cases, it's going to be the check is going to actually end up in your mailbox. That'll be the first notice you'll have that any money is owed to you.
And I can see where you would people could think it's a scam, because sometimes you feel like there is no free lunch, and actually this is not free money. This is your money that you're returning to the people. Accurate?
Well, for example, we had a gentleman we owed $20,000 to, and we wanted to present him the check in person, but he wouldn't return our phone calls because he thought it was a scam. We finally talked him into meeting me at a meeting where I was speaking, and I showed him my treasurer's ID and the check, and we have a photograph now to prove that he did get his money.
I've been getting texts lately about Thomas. First one said I declined a $5,000 Doge check. Then he sent me one the day after saying I declined a $10,000 Doge check. I'm gonna wait till I decline a $50,000 Doge check.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, so should people go and look at the site or just wait
yes.
to get their check? Tell me what you want them to do.
Well, I just think that a good fiscal hygiene for any family is at least once a year. Go to this site, lacashclaim.org, and if you forget that, simply Google it, Louisiana Unclaimed Property, and just, you know, all you have to do is put a little bit of your information in there. It's a searchable website, very user-friendly, and if your name pops up or your company, then all you have to do is make a claim, and you'll get the check, in most cases, in just a few days, maybe 3 days.
Tell me the site again, John.
LACashClaim.org, all one word.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time and your efforts. John Fleming, Louisiana State Treasurer. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Great. Thanks, Tommy.
You bet. And look, you may agree with John Fleming's politics, you may not, but he grew up in a working-class home. Father died when he was in high school. His mother was disabled, but yet he managed to put himself through school, through medical school, joined the Navy. He's a veteran and now a very successful businessman. So while you may not agree with his politics in all aspects, he is a very successful businessman and really, in a way, the epitome of the American dream.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And that being said, I'm sure he had little breaks along the way that helped him here or there, and I'd love to get him back on one day to talk about that and achieving the American dream. When we come back, we'll talk to Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. He'll help you manage your money right now. Time for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Friday morning. You know what that means? Time to help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. How you doing, Mark?
Happy Friday, sir.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday to you. We were talking to somebody earlier this week about people borrowing money to go on vacations. I could never, ever do that. Would you?
Yeah, that's to finance fund. That's you know, some people do that with Christmas time and,
I can see
those
saving
things.
Money
and
for it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, some places in the banking industry, they've responded to that. But, you know, the traditional Christmas club account that was made for people to save along the year. When the time came, they could withdraw the money and not finance it. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember working for a place that they had vacation club accounts for the same thing. People wanted to separate their money, put it in a unique place. So when that time came, they weren't financing it on credit cards and doing those types of things. It was pretty popular because I think people need that discipline to, you know, move the money into a unique pile where they're not financing.
That's what he said. And if you name the account, then that's the best way to do it. Let's talk about U.S. debt and Moody's and everything else. Mark, what are we talking about today?
Well, yes, that's what we're talking about. And, we kind of breached that subject last week when Moody's came out. Moody's is a bond rating agency, or they rate debt typically for companies. But it could go down to a municipality because the state of Louisiana borrows money, the city of New Orleans borrows money. And then what's happening with that is somebody's lending that money to them. So if we're buying a bond issued by Ford Motor Company, making sure everybody understands that de facto you're loaning money to Ford and they're going to pay you back with interest. So it's a loan by any other standard. We call them bonds and notes and those types of things to kind of point people's way into it's a marketable security, meaning it's traded on exchanges. But that's how, when we talk about the government deficits and debt, that's what it is. It's an accumulation since the beginning of time, the debt. And, it gets a lot of attention now because it keeps growing. It's $37 trillion. I think that's a lot of money. And, the way that the government runs its budget, it's structurally flawed, that it just keeps borrowing money and this keeps accumulating, and we just see the amount going higher and higher. So earlier in the year, I think with the advent of Doge and those coming onto the scene, it was looked at as, boy, they're going to, for the first time, somebody's going to have the courage, meaning an administration or the government in general, they're going to have the courage to tackle this tiger and to put a dent in the debt. So what they'd have to do is bring spending down on an annual basis, the deficit, into a part where they would have a surplus potentially and start using that extra money to pay down this $37 trillion and growing every day amount of money that it seems to have no end to it. Well, the financial markets took them seriously, and what was happening is it put downward pressure on interest rates. Because the adage would be, well, if you keep putting pressure on something, if people buy stocks in a very aggressive manner, it's no surprise that the stock price might rise. And if the government is borrowing money in an aggressive manner, it's called the crowding out argument, that they'll pull so much money out of the economy that money will become scarce And then the rate on that money, if you want to put your hands on some money, if you want to borrow some money, well, it's going to be at a premium to, meaning a higher interest rate than it maybe was some time before that. So when Moody's came out and said, you know, we're going to, okay, enough is enough. The Doge thing, I think, started out with a bang, and now it's kind of settling back to a whimper. And it's like, well, maybe they're not going to save the $1 trillion a year that some quotes are made along those lines. And it's Moody said, well, we can't. This is, you know, the government has just gotten to a point of irresponsibility. Not that this hasn't been done before, but I think this is getting a little bit more traction than in the times past. And they said, we're going to downgrade you. So if you're loaning money to Ford, or you're loaning money to the state of Louisiana, Moody's will come out and give them a credit rating, like you and I would have a credit rating and on our credit report. And the lower the credit rating, naturally, one, it exhibits a not the best responsibility for somebody of repaying their debt. But two, you're probably going to pay more than a person with better credit, because the lender, if it's a bank, credit union, or whomever, says, well, there's more risk into this loan. The person doesn't pay as well as they could, so loaning to that person is more risky than loaning to somebody with a higher credit rating. So the top credit rating in government debt is AAA. Well, Moody said, we're going to take you off of AAA and downgrade it one part of a level. It's AA1. That's a technical term for saying, well, you're not AAA anymore. And through my time in banking, it was always, well, you know, AAA is really the highest rating that a corporation could attain. Microsoft, for instance, has a AAA rating. And very few companies in the world have AAA. It's really a lofty perch. So when people say, well, the government has a AAA, actually, I always said, well, they have a quadruple A, which really doesn't exist. But when people quote a quadruple A, meaning that, well, the government can print money and, you know, Microsoft can't. So they really have a way out. If they get into a pinch, they print the money, they pay the bills. Nobody's ever going to not get paid from the federal government because of how they can do things, meaning going back to the printing press. We know what happens when they went to the printing press. Over the past couple of years, they printed an extra $5 trillion because of COVID. And we know that inflation ensued at fairly high levels, the highest level we saw in 40 years. And that hasn't been pleasant. We've been talking about inflation and the rates thereof for the past couple of years. It's just is normal conversation now. So when Moody's came out and said, no, we're going to take you down a level, it really sank in that a lot of the financial analysts that look at federal government debt, they said, well, this might be the wake-up call that we need. Okay, well, we had Doge, and we thought they were going to do one thing or another, and that's not happening. And now maybe we can do something here in the financial markets to really impress upon the Congress or impress upon the government in general that this isn't acceptable anymore. So no sooner than, I think it was May 16th, they had that written down, May 16th when the downgrade occurred, well, Tommy, interest rates started moving up. Mm-hmm. So the 30-year bond that the government regularly prints a couple of times a year, they'll borrow money on a 30-year basis like we would borrow money to finance a house for terms like that. It was about 4.4%, but in just a couple of weeks, it's over 5. That happened this week. So this part has started to back up, and the signal is being taken more seriously. And you have the mortgage rate, 30-year equivalent rate that we would borrow money, like the government borrows money for that length of time, the mortgage rate hit 7 again, where it was trending down earlier in the year, again, because of what Doge was going to potentially do and to get this government debt under control. So you've got Capital One, it was announced yesterday, Capital One now has a credit card that's charging 30% interest. Mm. And, you know, I mean, that breaking records here, and that may have caught a lot of attention, because it's one thing if it was 29, you're not going to get the same attention when it gets 30. So 30, that got some attention during the week. But the what somebody might not realize is, people don't realize, is when the government starts to raise money, they have to go to these auctions, because they just don't print a particular rate on there. They have to go to the general public, to financial firms, and they said, okay, we need to raise, fill in the blank, we need to raise $100 billion today to finance the government's needs. And then you have bidders, like it's not usually people, it's usually central banks from around the world, it's big money center banks, a Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, these big firms sitting there, and what they're doing is they're bidding an interest rate to which they would pay for that debt. So the government can't say, oh, you know what, we're going to raise all the money we need, we're just going to put a zero on there. Well, it wouldn't sell any. So the government has to go to the, in essence, to the financial markets to get the money they need. Well, they went out over the past week and they said, we're going to borrow money for a 20-year term. And what was always done was the auction was called oversubscribed. No matter what money they were borrowing, you had more bidders there. You had always plenty money in the room that would loan the government all the money that they wanted. And they still had bidders there saying, well, we could, you know, we're here, we could loan you even more money. No, that the auction's closed today. You'll have to wait till next week and we're going to come and borrow more money. Well, this time it wasn't oversubscribed. And this would be the cracks in the foundation that we need to worry about as a country. That what happens if the government went to borrow money and they didn't get the money they needed at the auction? So that's what's happening now, Tom. It's causing upward pressure on rates, and it's going to trickle through to us, and it already has. So they need to get serious about this debt. And with this big, beautiful bill that the administration was putting out recently, it got approved by the, what I understand, by the House, is that it's going to contain more deficit spending. So that's the trouble that we're facing right now.
Thank you, Mark. Valuable information, insider look. A little bit late, 7:55, 5 till 8, traffic now, WWL. All right, 8:14, quickly to Tony McCauley, reporter with Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. We did part one of this yesterday, but we're going to have to recap a little bit. Tony, we're talking about Churchill Downs, who owns the fairgrounds, possibly pulling out of stopping racing at the fairgrounds. If that were to happen, then what happens from there? But first, we'll go back and recap what it is that led us to this point. Tony, I'm going to shut up and let you tell a story. Have at it.
Yeah. Okay. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Yeah, so what happened was Churchill Downs, which has run the fairgrounds for the last 21 years, told the Racing Commission last week that it would pull out, it would stop racing and wouldn't go ahead with this year's season in November if they didn't get a subsidy to plug a hole that was left after a Supreme Court decision by the Louisiana Supreme Court that basically took away its ability to run these type of slot machines called historical horse racing, which they've been doing since 2021. And they've been giving them quite a lot of additional revenue. So they said they want a subsidy like they get in Florida, or they will pull out of the state, basically.
All right. So the court said that, yes, they're right. And this is where we get a little bit in the weeds with the type of game that they were using, that it wasn't covered under current law. There would have to be a new law passed for this game to be legal, which leads us to, OK, you're talking about a subsidy. Horse racing is called the sport of kings. You would be subsidizing whom? I mean, so the state has a limited budget. You would be paying the people that are in horse racing a subsidy. That's what we're saying, right?
Yeah, that's right. As we said yesterday, these people, the companies who run the tracks, have since the 90s, they've been making more and more of their money from the slot machines. They basically become casinos that subsidize the horse racing side of the business. The horse racing side is sort of gone down since, you know, for many years. So they need the money, the revenue they get from the slot machines to subsidize the horse racing side. So these historical horse racing machines, they call them HHR, they're basically slot machines. It's just based on the kind of software that runs historical races anonymized and then pays out up to, you know, you get really big jackpots like 100,000. So that had been making up more and more of their slot machine revenue, which they use to cover purses for the horse race winners and the expenses of running the tracks.
Right.
So what they told the commission last week was losing HHR meant they would have almost half their profits gone away, and wouldn't be able to cover the $9 million expenses they have to run fairgrounds every year.
And the state only has X amount of money, right? So you got to make choices. It would be talking about, again, subsidizing the horse racing industry. That's accurate?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what sources have told me is that Governor Landry is not inclined to give them a subsidy. So that's the standoff.
All right, so let's game it out. He doesn't give them the subsidy. What happens from there?
Well, if they follow through on their threat, then they would leave the state of Louisiana. If what they say is true, they're not able to make enough money to make a profit here, and they would leave the state, and therefore they would be putting fairgrounds, and they've got 13 OTDs as well. They'd be putting the fairgrounds, though, which is the most important thing for us. It's the historical racetrack, mm-hmm. been here since the 1830s, up for sale, and therefore the question is who might buy it.
And let's talk about that. What names are being bandied about, or are there people that are interested in buying it?
Well, yeah, from my reporting, talking to quite a number of the people in the industry, there are basically two that are on everyone's tongues. The first one is Gail Benson. When her late husband, Tom, and she actually tried to buy it before in about 2016. There were stricter rules on NFL owners owning gambling operations back mm-hmm. then, but those rules are looser now. So she would be at the top contender. And her spokesperson actually told me that didn't say she would be interested directly, but didn't rule it out, left the door open, said she was monitoring the situation. And the other person is Jim Bernard, who's a billionaire from Baton Rouge, and who got into horse racing a few years ago in a big way with his wife. And those are the two leading contenders, everyone agrees.
All right, so the question is, you can answer this when we come back. The question I have is, and I don't know if there's an answer or not, but if Churchill Downs says they can't run it at a profit without HHR, that game that they want to run at their slot machines, that the state Supreme Court, as I understand it, said no, this it's not grand. If they want to use this machine, there would have to be a new law. Again, not to get too far in the weeds. What happens with Gail Benson or Jim Bernhard? Would they be able to run the track without a subsidy or without HHR? And I don't know what the experts are saying about that, or if you know, but we'll find out. We come back. Tony McCauley, our guest reporter for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. As a taxpayer, I got a problem with, you know, people that are involved with the sport of Kings or Churchill Downs and horse racing getting a subsidy from the state. We'll talk about that when we come back. 820 traffic now, WWL. 825, 826, Tommy Tucker. Quickly back to Tony McCauley, reporter with the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. Talking about this Churchill Downs fairgrounds thing, it's not about slot machines. It's about a specific type of slot, correct, Tony?
Yes, that's correct.
The HHR. So my question before the break is, if Churchill, here's the way my mind works in a linear manner, okay? I'm thinking, well, if Churchill Downs says they can't run this without a subsidy because they don't have HHR, then how is another owner going to do it? Or if another owner can do it, then Churchill Downs is kind of fibbing and they'll really need the subsidy. And when it comes to the court ruling, whether it's Gail Benson or Jim Bernhard or whomever buys it, they wouldn't have HHR slots either, would they? So does that kind of prove whether or not they can run it without those machines at a profit?
Yeah, well, there's a lot there. Mm-hmm. The first question, of course, is it a loss-making operation? And at the Racing Commission meeting, Louis Roussel, who's a legendary Louisiana horse breeder, spoke and said to the commission, call their bluff. You know, they make money. They're just poor mouthing, were his words. Now, what you need to look at, they don't produce figures locally, Churchill Downs, but nationally, they're a very, very profitable organization. They just had record profits on $2.5 billion a year. They made about well over $400 million. So they're very profitable, but they haven't done that, with it, a lot of that increasing amount of that has come from these HHR machines. So, you know, we'll have to kind of look under the hood here. They'll have to show their numbers to the regulators here and to lawmakers here if they want to try to get a subsidy. But they have shown that they will pull out of racetracks around the country when it doesn't work for them, when they don't make enough profits, like they did in, you know, several locations, including Arlington, where they sold to the Bears. So the second question then is, you know, would these owners take it on if it wasn't particularly profitable? And what Benson's folks said to me was they noted that they understand the difficulties of running a racetrack. And then they noted that she has a record of supporting local institutions, you know, both on a philanthropic basis and stepping in to invest. So that's basically the position there. We hadn't heard from Jim Bernhard, but he certainly has the wherewithal to be able to buy a track like that and run it.
And to be clear, the state Supreme Court said that this specific type of slot machine, this HHR, they shut them down until they would have to be approved by a referendum in each parish, right? So where does the court action stand? Is Churchill Downs appealing that to somebody else, or is that it as far as the Supreme Court goes?
So the Supreme Court said just as you said, so they would have to do that on a parish by parish basis, but it's not just as simple as that, because they would have opposition from the people who brought the suit, which are the truck stop operators. So it'd be, you know, a lengthy legal battle there. What they did in Kentucky when they lost a similar Supreme Court decision was to get the legislature to just overturn it, you know, or not overturn it, but make new law. But that's, you know, that's a little bit more difficult here because you'd be, you know, the parishes have won that right to make their own decision at the local level. So the other thing that they've done, other solution elsewhere, is in Florida, where last year they got the Florida government just to give them a permanent annual subsidy to help cover their costs. So those are the options that I think it's the second option is the one that they're pushing for, you know.
So politically, it would seem as though the governor or government has a choice between subsidizing Churchill Downs or letting it revert to local ownership. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the local owner, just, you know, to be absolutely clear, they haven't, you know, specifically said they're going to put it up for sale. I mean, it's just implied by their threat to pull out of the state. And neither of the two locals have explicitly said they would buy it. But if you read between, or not read between the lines, but certainly Gail Benson left it open and Jim Bernhard didn't comment on it. So,
yeah, I think,
and a lot of the industry would really like to see a local owner. So that's the situation.
And I think when you look at the way the opposition's going to frame it, it's going to be, all right, why are we subsidizing an out-of-town company when there could be local ownership on this? Thank you, Tony. I appreciate your reporting.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you again as this progresses. We'll take a break, come back, talk to DA Jason Williams about the escape from parish prison, 8:30, time for WWL First News. All right, 844, 16 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly to District Attorney Jason Williams. And Jason, I got to tell you, if I scratch my head anymore over this jailbreak, I'm going to have to get some more Band-Aids because it just keeps getting sillier and sillier. Tell me what happened yesterday.
Well, Tommy, first of all, people in our condition can't scratch our heads too hard.
No, you're right about that because there's no hiding it because we're bald. There's nothing.
No, sir. Yep. No, sir. It's deeply troubling, and it keeps getting more and more problematic. The more questions we ask, the more questions we have. I reached out to my most excellent partner in all of this work, Chief Kirkpatrick, yesterday morning to find out if the sheriff had formally requested a crime lab forensic examination of the site of the hole of that cell that the inmates got out of. She told me they had not. We discussed it for a couple of moments, and she mobilized her crime lab, and she had Dr. Kelly, the director of the crime lab, Chief Nicole Powell, and just a real crackerjack team get over there in a matter of moments. I walked over and met them.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And we just walked through the entire area as it should have been done moments after the jailbreak. And it's deeply troubling that the sheriff would not have requested that and would have wanted those answers immediately.
Yeah, because, and I want to ask you about, you talked about preserving video evidence. One question I have is, if all of this was captured on camera and it didn't happen in a couple of minutes, I've seen snippets of video. I don't know if the whole thing, because this was akin to a construction project or deconstruction, if you will, if all of this was captured on videotape, I don't know if that's preserved or not. That's what you're asking, I guess. And the other question is, when it comes to who was involved with this, that's why processing it as a crime scene becomes so important. Accurate?
Absolutely accurate. 100%, Tommy. So we sent preservation letters out. This happens in the civil legal world and the criminal legal world. You want to make sure things are preserved. You don't typically expect to have to ask law enforcement partners to do this kind of stuff, though. But we ask that any logs, records of deputies, where inmates were supposed to be housed, right? Because as we know now, 10 of these guys escaped from one pod. When none of these individuals were actually assigned to that particular pod. I know you've had former Sheriff Marlon Guzman on the show to discuss some of this. Mm-hmm. I was in some of those meetings early on with Judge Afric and the sheriff when they were designing this jail. The first four pods are for handicapped and mobily challenged inmates. None of these individuals fit that. It's for a lower threat individual. So where they were supposed to be, how they got from where they were, when the toilet came out, all of that. It should be on some monitor, and so we've asked that all of those things be preserved, what maintenance work was being done, who had access to what. So we need to go back and do a deep autopsy about who was where at 11 o'clock, 11:05, and on, because like you said, Tommy, this did not happen in a matter of seconds and moments.
Do you have any idea time frame how long this took?
You know, it's hard to say. I can tell you there's several feet of concrete from where that toilet attaches on the inside of the cell and where it's bolted. There's bars that had to be cut with some instrumentality that inmates are never supposed to be anywhere close to, right? So this could not have been a quick operation. And it could not have been done with these 10 inmates and one individual alone. And fingerprints, DNA, all of that stuff will help us get to that point. And so I've also asked the sheriff to give us to voluntarily turn over or fingerprint all maintenance workers, employees, and also do a buckle swab, so that we can either include or exclude individuals from the rest of this inquiry.
With all of the cameras, And if, again, going back to the snippets of video, I would have to believe that all of this was captured on camera. If not, they were turned off. Tell me how that works.
So it should have been not just captured, but viewed in real time as the protocol for direct supervision facility. Those cameras are not there so that a sheriff or a deputy can go back and see what happened. Mm-hmm. Those cameras are so that these human beings can have eyes on these inmates 24 hours a day, right? So it should have never happened because of these monitors and cameras, but absolutely it should be recorded and memorialized for posterity for a jury to look at to see who did what and when.
But you're talking about, to be clear, hours, not minutes, right?
Correct. We asked for preservation of all logs and records dating back to April 1st, because you don't know how methodically and how surreptitiously this was planned. And so we want to look at everything over the past 2 months to figure out how these 10 guys were able to get out of that small hole.
I want to talk to you when we come back about overcrowding. Some people are stuck on that, and I understand that as a problem. But it just seems to me that, again, not to lose sight of the big picture here, if they had only 10 people in jail, if these were only 10 people in jail, if they were where they were and the cameras were not being monitored, they would have escaped. So I don't see where overcrowding really enters into this escape at all. Unless there was nowhere else to put these 10 people, and I've not heard anything about that. We'll talk about it when we come back with DA Jason Williams, 851, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:56, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back with Jason Williams, District Attorney. So, Jason, both a blessing and a curse is a thing in a linear manner. So here's what I'm thinking. Because we hear about overcrowding, but it seems as though if these 10 inmates were where they were under the supervision that they were under, they still would have escaped. Unless you want to say that there was no room on the upper floors of the jail and that's why they had to be there. But if that's the case, then you would have to presume that the people on the upper floors were more dangerous than they were. Unless it's a staffing issue where they didn't have enough people to watch the lower floors. But if that's the case, then I go back to they shouldn't have been on the lower floor to begin with. Am I missing something here or not?
You're not missing a thing, except for that common sense that you just laid out was not being applied over there at the jail. Other sheriffs, like my friend Joe LaPinto and Jimmy Pullman, other sheriffs across the state are responsible for serving and protecting the entire public of that parish and maintaining a jail. The sheriff in Orleans Parish only has to keep inmates in jail, care, custody, and control. Growing up here, I remember there were three times the number of people in our parish jail, and we didn't have 10 violent offenders just slipping out. So if a cell door is broken on a Monday, you fix it on a Monday or at the worst, a Tuesday. If monitors on your cameras are down, you replace them. If somebody's computer in the DA's office goes out, we replace it. This is just common sense stuff. It's not asking a lot.
So let me get back to linear thinking, which is you told me on Monday, I think it was, whatever, that it's been a long week, but that the state or the governor said they moved 20 prisoners, which meant that there was room at state facilities for these 20 prisoners. So that, to me, takes overcrowding off of the table, because the sheriff should have moved these people prior to that if they had room for 20 people and the governor could move them immediately. Am I saying anything wrong there?
If we moved them in less than a couple of days, then they could have been moved a year ago.
Right.
Right. They could have been moved 2 years ago. They could have been moved months ago. So we can't blame overcrowding. We can't blame broken equipment. This is a management issue. This is an oversight issue. One job for a jailer. Eyes on inmates 24/7. And it just wasn't happening.
So if it was overcrowding, and I'm not saying it was, it was the sheriff's fault, because there was obviously room for 20 prisoners that were moved immediately. Accurate?
Clearly. Okay. Clearly. The case has been made.
So what happens next?
Well, there are several different inquiries going on. I'm working very methodically with AG Morrell. She's been a great partner in this. She's dealing with a consent decree, dealing with staffing, dealing with the overcrowding issue. I'm focused on criminal culpability to figure out what happened. I think we're going to find gross negligence and criminal culpability here. But the focus is making sure this place is secure and getting these other five back in custody, which is going to happen, but would have happened a lot faster had we not allowed them to have that 8-hour head start because she didn't notify us.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate your time. As always, Jason Williams, New Orleans District Attorney. Again, seems like a lot of common sense stuff to me, but we'll talk to Ian McNulty. We'll come back. You've been a very helpful witness, Mr. Cohen. Mr. McNulty, take the stand. Might I remind you, you're under oath. Smartphones go away. We're better off or worse off?
Unequivocally better.
Better off without them.
Unequivocally. And I point to the example of the Louisiana crawfish boil. You and I have talked about this before. It's one of the few places that exist anywhere from high-speed travel on the interstate to intimate moments with your family where the cell phone is not a constant fixation. And I am not preaching, you know, from Ohio on this. I am 100% that person with the phone in the hand. But at the crawfish boil, the phone is in the pocket because the hands are busy and covered in crawfish guts. And isn't that nice? Just for a few minutes. Whatever is dinging and pinging and ponging in your, on your phone can just wait until you get that mushroom at the underneath that.
So, well, hang on a second. Jordan Fiegel, our millennial misanthrope, sent a gift to me of Old Man Simpson yelling out at Old Man yells at clouds, and Jordan said, that's what this conversation is. Now, yes, now I don't think it is because I just don't think – go ahead, Dave. What are you going to lose?
I think I look at it in a the phone is a lot of things. What it has really boiled down to is it's no longer a phone. It's a computer that is a content gathering machine.
Exactly.
You see people are photographing everything, they're videoing everything. You can do all this before.
It's not a phone. It's a computer. Let's redefine it because it's not a phone. It's a computer.
It's a very small computer that happens to have a phone app. But you can do all these things before, and people did. And it just took a slight more effort, and what you turned out was more valuable as a result. Not everybody was a cultural anthropologist because they could wave their little pocket computer at things and like have commentary on it anytime something upset them at waiting in line at the supermarket or they're bored in their car. You had actually had to make an effort to put your opinions and your angst and your frustrations and your judgments out into the world. And maybe that pause of like, I am so upset, I'm going to compose a letter to the editor, or I am going to have a discussion about this with my friends on the porch. Maybe that pause and that mental activity, or just the process of developing your film and seeing what was on that camera, maybe that cooled you off just a bit, and maybe not having that cool off period is the reason people are so dang hot and quick.
No. Irrelevant. Your Honor, objection, irrelevant. That's got nothing. No. See you. Thank you, Dave. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Thanks for working for Monday. Let's talk to Ian McNulty about eating and drinking. How you doing, man? Where you been eating? Where you been drinking?
Well, everywhere I've been doing that, I've been taking pictures and videos with my phone. So
there you go.
Reality check here.
You could be using a camera for that.
Yeah, and if you see me doing one of my exercise walks along Bayou St. John, I got my phone in my hand and I'm taking notes on my phone. Yeah, it would change my life for sure. But, interesting thought experiment. Tommy, I've had a great week of eating and drinking, and I've had a great week of talking with New Orleans people, restaurant people, but also just restaurant lovers about restaurants, about dining out, about food, because we're in that pivotal time. And I feel like we've talked about this for a while now coming into the summer. Summer is so crucial. It's so pivotal. It's so rough for the restaurants, but also the flip side of it is it can be so rewarding for us as restaurants and food enthusiasts. And the evidence of that is just playing out all over my coverage this week. I had an interesting sort of a thought experiment, a theory that I was analyzing with restaurant people. The restaurants take a lot of hits in the summertime. Would it be better to just close, just altogether close? A lot of New Orleans restaurants, you all go on hiatus, hibernate, avoid the losses you inevitably take, and then, open up in late September, October, see you for the upswing. And that was in theory, and I was getting feedback from restaurant people about that. And then right in the middle of gathering that information, I learned that one is doing pretty much just that, the Uptown restaurant Boucherie. It's in Carrollton, actually. Great place, been around forever, started as a food truck, grew into a really unique restaurant. They decided, we're closing all of June, all of July. We'll see you in August when culinary, the citywide summer dining program starts up. We just can't do it. We can't take the losses we took last summer, and we have some other options for our staff, which is a crucial thing.
That's what I wanted to ask you. How do you do that? What does that look like for the staff?
Well, so they're an outlier, right? But it was interesting because Boucherie is testing out the thing. A lot of restaurant people have told me they have mold and haven't found a way to quite do. And the big thing is that, right? You need your staff. You've trained your staff. You love your staff. They're great at what they do. You can't just tell them to hit the bricks and try to rehire everybody in 3 or 4 months, right? That's how ski towns work. That's how beach towns work. But that's not New Orleans, not yet anyway. Well, are we going that way? I don't know. In the case of Boucherie, they had a unique circumstance where they have another restaurant around the corner called Bouret, which is very casual. And the chef, Nathaniel, over both of them, he is in the process of revamping Bouret to become something much different, much more sort of a picture like an uptown Bacchanal with an outdoor patio, kind of beer garden, wine garden, a lot of charcuterie, deli, that kind of thing. And he's got a farm to table program that he's developing with a large warehouse space. It's going to bring a lot of fresh food in, and he works with schools on lunch and feeding programs. So he's got other things in the works that he can deploy his restaurant staff to do until through June and July, for those who want to stick with him, until August when Boucherie reopens. Not all restaurants have that. Pointedly, restaurant people I talked to said, yeah, we really did consider it. Like, we lose our shirts. Like, they really lose a lot of money. I'm not talking about not making money or not doing as well as they do, you know, in February, March. Like, they lose the gush money until the upswing comes around. And so they're looking for anything to help them, and they have to consider, well, what if we just close the doors, cut expenses, didn't have to turn on the AC, didn't have to do this, didn't have to do that. But it all comes down to they want to keep their folks, they want to keep their people. So they find different ways to do it. Great example, I have a story about this right now, NOLA.com, is the restaurant Palm and Pine, who are very open with me about how they've struggled with this. It's a great restaurant on the edge of the French Quarter, very close to the Sanger. I recommend it all the time. It's a modern New Orleans restaurant. I really love it. And so they go into summer trim. You know, they cut what they can. They cut a day of service. They cut one of the weekend brunches. They close an hour early. They reduce staff. They go down to one bartender. The chefs, the owners are both chefs, and now they're working stations in the kitchen where maybe they're working two of them where before they had a cook working one of them. And it's not all about cuts. They also do things to bring people in and boost interest. So they start a guest chef series through the summer. They bring in other people from around the country that they're friends with, they want to collaborate with, and they can do a special event around. And that's what you start seeing as the summer progresses. Restaurants go off the script. They do a lot of different things. They're trying to boost interest in the public. And frankly, they're also recharging their own spirit, their morale. They're getting their fighting spirit back up. Like, this is why we do this. Being a restaurateur, a small independent mom and pop kind of place. And that qualifies everything from a sandwich shop to a Commander's Palace. I mean, these are all independent restaurants, are all kind of family restaurants in New Orleans. It's a passion business, and that passion battery can take a beating in the summer when you look at low reservation books and empty dining rooms and empty bars. You start to wonder if people like you or not anymore. Where is everybody? Truth is, they're feeling kind of broke themselves, or they're at the beach, or the tourists aren't around, but they're still thinking about you. So you give them reasons to come back out and see you. And that's another reason why summer dining in New Orleans is kind of glorious. The locals have campus to themselves, right? And the restaurants are going more than halfway to attract you. And it can be a really good time, and your business will never matter more. And we can talk a lot more about this as the summer goes on, Tommy. I want to keep going on it. But,
yeah, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We'll come back. One thing I do want to touch on, since you brought it up, is about the staff, because this is the way my mind works. I'm thinking it's important that you have a staff that you're comfortable with, that wait staff. It can make or break the restaurant, right? The front of the house. So you want to keep the good people you have. But yet, if you close, what are they going to do? Are you going to get them back? Are they going to go do something else? But if you don't close and you stay open and it's slow, are they making any money anyway? We'll pick it up there. We come back with Ian McNulty. Also, we'll talk eating and drinking spots. You got any questions about where to eat or drink this Memorial Day weekend, the Oakland Heart Jeweler Talk and Text line is open as always, 504-260-1870. Please do not text and drive. More with Ian McNulty when we come back on WWL. So as we talk about restaurants, you know, if you burn stuff in a kitchen, nobody knows about it. You just cook it over. When you screw it up on the air, everybody knows about it. I dropped tea on my papers and my notes, which meant I tried to open something online while I was talking Ian McNulty, and as I tried to do that, I opened it, and it came up in Japanese. At that point, I was pretty much screwed. Let's talk about staffing in restaurants and the conundrum of it's slow in summertime, so you don't want to close because you don't want to lose your staff, but if they're not making any money anyway, how do you balance that?
Well, as I learned from my story this week, there are strategies that restaurants have deployed over the long term. One of them is you encourage folks to take vacations, you know, take 2 weeks, take a month. But, you know, things are changing, Tommy, and it's getting harder. It's getting harder for the restaurants to manage this summer shift because, well, as we all know, costs are going up. Costs are especially going up for restaurants. Food prices, staffing, utilities, that unabated insurance crisis that the state is contending with while our leaders waste a lot of time on social warfare, cultural war issues, instead of just fixing the things that would...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to ExpressPros.com to find your location. That's ExpressPros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Really help us. Can you tell I'm pleading? All of these things impact restaurants especially. And because of their profit margins are so very thin, and in New Orleans, and it's not just the city thing, this is all over the metro area because the metro area is completely dependent on New Orleans. They have to save up money in the good times because they know they're going to give it away in the slow times. And so the strategies have to change because that math is getting much, much harder. So it's getting to the point now where restaurant people tell me in some cases if they're hiring people during the busy time because they need all hands on deck, they're going to have full dining rooms. This is great. This is the time to make hay. Sometimes they're telling these folks, look, this is a seasonal hire now. And if you have if you're from out of town, you know, if you have some connections back home, wherever that is, maybe get a summer job back there. You know, if you have friends working somewhere else that's really busy in the summertime, maybe think about doing that because we'd love to have you back in October, but we might not be able to keep you June, July, August, September. So that's different. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The staffing thing is the conundrum. That's the thing. And so, you know, they encourage vacations, and frankly, just people earn less. And another way that plays out is, you know, some of the biggest supporters of the local restaurant scene are other restaurant hospitality workers, waiters, cooks, bartenders, managers, the people who live and breathe that business and love hospitality and really get it. They they spread their money around. I mean, sometimes the hospitality economy in New Orleans feels like one pot of money that sort of gets traded from mm-hmm. restaurant and bar to restaurant and bar. But one measure you can see is that, you know, Monday nights are usually really big for restaurants that are open because people from hospitality jobs go out on Monday night. Mm-hmm. Their places may be closed. That's a good night for a lot of places until the summer starts progressing. And as the summer progresses, it gets less and less busy because those people have less and less money. I mean, you can just read it in the room sometimes. So, you know, it's a big problem. It's a big issue. And it's something that everybody in the business has to contend with. And again, I'll harp on this a little bit. It's not just the city. It's not just, oh, that's what you get for, you know, depending on tourism in New Orleans. All of the metro area is one way or the another dependent on New Orleans, which is the economic engine of Louisiana. And there's a lot riding on the hospitality culture of New Orleans that spreads out throughout the entire community. And so even people who run restaurants in Metairie and Kenner and the West Bank, they tell me, yeah, it's slower in the summer because everybody's feeling it. Everyone has less money and people go on vacations and they're contending with come back to school bills. So there's a lot of it to go around, and there's no one solution, but I know that people are getting more creative with it because the odds and the stakes are getting harder.
Let's make some suggestions for people. Somebody texted in and said they understand the problem the restaurants face. That's why they and their wife try to go to a different restaurant each week to try to support them that they've never eaten at before. So give me some suggestions, some places where people can go in if they want to support the local restaurant, have something different to eat. Give me some suggestions for places that perhaps people have never been.
Let me give you a couple of strategies first, okay? We can talk particular restaurants, but you know everybody is feeling it, so I don't want to single out, hey, go to Joe's restaurant or whatever,
okay.
Right?
All right.
Think about the flexibility of your own schedule, because even as slow as things get in the summertime, Friday at 7 o'clock is still the time that everyone wants to go out to dinner. Saturday at 7 o'clock is when everyone wants to go out to dinner. And I've had restaurant people tell me they pull their hair out because in the summertime they know they're going to do 75% of their business for the night at one seating at 7 o'clock on Friday or Saturday. So if it's summertime, you're able to kick off early and get a 5 o'clock reservation. Heck, I've gotten 4:30 p.m. reservations before. And Tommy, I am here for it because that means cocktail hour starts early.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. And if you can extend the day with these late sunsets and you have some aperitifs somewhere and then you pick up that 8 o'clock reservation, even that 8:30 reservation, sun's gone down, it's getting cool. Maybe you can eat outside on the patio because as hot as it is in summertime during the day, it often is very nice to sit outside in the evening if you're surrounded by big oak trees and gardens and such. Do that, you know. So that lets the restaurants basically double or triple the business that they can do. Don't look at, you know, if you go to book an online reservation and you see it's all the 7 o'clocks are booked up. Be a little flexible with your schedule. Also, pick up the phone. Very often, especially in New Orleans, don't rely on what the internet shows you, please. Like it's not everything you see on Resy or OpenTable is the only reservations that these restaurants have. Especially if you're calling from a 504 or 985 number, the restaurant picks that up. They know you're local. Yeah, they often have a couple tables they're holding back or that aren't on their online platform. So maybe you can get that 7 o'clock after all. Or they may suggest, hey, if you could come in at 6:30, that would be great. Work with them a little bit, mm-hmm. right? To that effect, parties. You know, the parties, the holiday party scene is huge for restaurants. You can make your own holiday party in the summertime. Three out of 12 people are bound to have birthdays between the months of June, July, and August, right? Mm-hmm. So do it up, you know, do it up like it was a holiday party. It's a lot easier to get a table for 10 in June, in July, and August than it is in December. Believe me, I'm a December baby. Maybe I'm going to do halfway to my birthday party this year.
Do that?
Yeah, I'm going to do that. That is what I'm going
to
do.
Why do you have to be 2.5? Why can't you be 35 and a half?
Exactly. So that's another idea. Or also, if you're booking a party, if you know you're booking a party, your law firm, your accounting firm, whatever, is booking a party, a Christmas party, you know, you're going to spend some money, you have that budgeted for the holidays. I'm not talking about doing it now. Don't change the world. But you're going to book a party in December or something. Book it now and pay the deposit now. You know you're going, but the restaurant could use that cash now badly. For the business that they're going to give you when it's the busy time. Things like that. Just think about, like, what can I do? I'm not asking to spend more money because we're all up against it. You know, there's only so much discrepant you know what I mean, the dining dollars.
There's only so much money go around. I mean, right. If I owned a restaurant, I'd be concerned about that because there's only so much disposable income that people have.
Right. So use it right. And I've had restaurant people tell me, too, like we're trying to be creative because New Orleans people are generous. You can't say, like, hey, you should tip more. New Orleans people tip very well. They get it. It's the hospitality culture. But just be more strategic and a little more creative in how we help these restaurants get through their hard time. I mean, Tommy, it's a lot like a mini COVID in a way. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to minimize that. But you know, the way that we talked about how do we support restaurants during the pandemic when they were under these harsh limitations and they're really on the ropes, it's a little bit like that in the summertime. And so just think how you can meet these places halfway. Think about the places you really value. Think about the places you haven't been to in a long time. And I'm here to tell you, this summer, I'm going to be telling you about all kinds of new restaurants. Boy, I've got some hot ones coming up in the next couple of weeks that you're going to love hearing about. That's called a tease.
Right.
But you're also going to be hearing from me all summer long about restaurants that have been around for a while that I'm revisiting. Because that's one of the things that I've embraced for this summer, this slow season. I'm going to walk the walk of going to these places that I haven't been to in a while and hopefully putting them back on the map for folks.
Before we run out of time, there's only so much money to go around, but the people hold the Greek Fest every year, 50th annual. They need some, attendance as well. Tell me a couple of words about the Greek Fest before we let you go, please.
So glad you brought this up. It's the 50th anniversary. This is a really special festival. It feels like a family reunion, a Greek family reunion built around food and wine on Bayou St. John. It's so terrific. It's up there by the lake. And what makes it different is that it's not restaurant vendors, it's not caterers and that kind of thing that we see at most festivals, which are wonderful. For Greek Fest, it is the community. It is home cooking on a massive scale from the guys manning the rotisseries for the spring lamb to the amazing bake shop inside that they set up. There's a market. People go there and go shopping, Tommy. I mean, mm-hmm. they bring bags to bring stuff home, and you'll see people filling up the Tupperware that they brought in for all the baked goods and the specialty products in the market, and then just feasting all day long on the specialties. And by the way, I've got a hot tip. Feta fries are back, okay? After a hiatus since the pandemic, Greek Fest has brought back the feta fries. Also, the ouzo lemonade, the ouzo jello shots, and the pomegranate daiquiris. Opa, my friend. It's going to be good on the bayou at Greek Fest.
Thank you, Ian McNulty. A pleasure as always. You can find everything Ian talks about at Ian McNulty. Just Google his name and it'll come up. I will say this, when it comes to Greek Fest, having been there, in addition to all the great stuff to eat and drink and everything else, take a tour of the church because it's a beautiful building. It really is. And they give tours of the church. You got to be respectful, of course, but it's a beautiful building. We'll take a break, come back, talk about what's going on at the National World War II Museum for Memorial Day, which, of course, happens this weekend. We'll take a break, come back, WWL. Right now, traffic. 9:45, quarter till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Friday, May 23rd. Heading into Memorial Day weekend, and sometimes what Memorial Day is all about becomes the least of it, and that's the last thing in the world that any of us want to happen. Maggie Hartley joins us now, Director of Public Engagement for the National World War II Museum. How you doing, Maggie?
Doing all right. Thanks for having me on today.
You got one heck of an operation over there, I'm going to tell you. You really do. I love going to the National World War II Museum. Tell me a little bit about what's going on for Memorial Day weekend, please.
Absolutely. So really on Monday is when we have our big commemoration of this important day. You know, a lot of people recognize this is the start of the summer, but it's important not to forget that this is a day about remembering those who gave their lives in service to our country, the reason why we have the freedom to be able to go to the beach and have barbecues with our friends. And so it's important to take a moment to remember that. And so that's what we're doing on Monday morning at 11 o'clock with our Memorial Day commemoration ceremony. We're going to have a performance by the American Legion Post 377 Band. And then our keynote speaker is going to be Gail Joyce. She understands Memorial Day probably more than any of us ever could. She lost her husband due to the effects of Agent Orange in Vietnam. And she lost her son in one of the battles in Somalia, the one that was actually tied to Black Hawk Down, which many of us recognize due to that movie. And so she understands the cost of freedom more than many of us. And so it's going to be a very impactful way to just take an hour just to remember why we have our freedom and why we have this holiday weekend.
When it comes to the other things that are going on at the National World War II Museum, sometimes, Maggie, I get tongue-tied because there are so many things I want to talk about, and there's just a limited amount of time. Tell me about the Aleutian Islands campaign exhibit, would you please?
Absolutely. So we have an exhibit. It opened up just a few months ago. It's on American shores, the Aleutian Islands campaign. Many of you may be scratching your heads wondering, well, what even is that? It actually is about the only fighting that occurred in North America on land in World War II in Alaska. And so it looks at the different battles, including the Battle of the Two, that were instrumental in pushing back the Japanese away from North America. So it's a very insightful exhibit. I encourage everyone to come out. It's a part of World War II history that really isn't discussed.
Tell me about some of the other things that don't get the big attention at the National World War II Museum that people want to see when they go and make their trip.
Absolutely. I will say one thing to keep on your radar right now, if it's been a while since you've been to the museum, is that Beyond All Boundaries will be undergoing refurbishment in the next few months. So if you want a chance to see it before it gets updated, it will be available through the next probably 2 or 3 weeks. Here at the museum, there's always something going on. You know, we recently just launched our Blue Star Museums program that allows all active Reserve and National Guard members to bring their families to the museum for free. So it's another way that we pay tribute to those who defend our freedom day in and day out. We are in the final stretch for our special exhibit, Fighting for the Right to Fight, that looks at the African-American experience in World War II, and that'll be open through July. So there's lots of different things going on and some things that you definitely don't want to miss out on coming up in the next few weeks.
Tell me about the Boeing Pavilion, if you can, for people that have never been there. Describe it.
Absolutely. So the Boeing Pavilion is the U.S. Freedom Pavilion, the Boeing Center. And it is one of the most, I would say, magical components of our museum. When you walk in, you see these beautiful warbirds up in the ceiling, so planes from World War II, and you have the opportunity to get up close to them on our different catwalks throughout this space and get to have a bird's eye view into what was experienced in the air war. It's truly an incredible space that also has many of our vehicles from World War II, including tanks, and the duck jeep, you know, the jeeps that would go from land to water. So really, it's an amazing space, and especially for kids. Kids light up when they go into this space because it's so cool to see these huge vehicles and planes.
Kids are going to love the USS Tang experience, too. Tell me about that.
Exactly. So in our Freedom Pavilion, we also have the USS Tang submarine experience, and that's included in admission with the museum. And so you can go and you learn more about the USS Tang, which was a submarine. I won't completely give away the story for it because it kind of ruins the surprise for what happens. But you get to experience a day in combat with the submarine, and each person's assigned to a different role, and you get to kind of see the different positions on a submarine. You know, oftentimes we just think of submarines as being underwater and navigating in that way, but there were quite a few men on board who had different roles, and it gives you a good insight into that, and then pays tribute to the men who lost their lives on the USS Tang as well.
And gives you a chance to kind of pretend that you are on the submarine. I know Jordan Fiedler and I were grown men, and we still enjoyed it. You didn't have to be a kid to do that. Tell me real quick about the Bayou to Battlefield, because I love that part of it and the unique part that New Orleans played in the history of the World War with the Higgins boats.
Absolutely. So when it comes to New Orleans, the biggest reason why we're here is because of Higgins Industries. And so they constructed Higgins boats along with quite a few different craft for the water, of course, that really helped us win the war. You know, Eisenhower would go on and credit Andrew Higgins and the Higgins boats, specifically the landing craft, for our success in World War II. And they were essentially constructed here, inspired by the bayous and the need for a flat boat with easy mobility, and then utilized for the military during World War II. And so we have different boats, different landing craft on display here at the museum. We have PT-05, which is also a Higgins Industries constructed vessel that guests are able to come and take a close look at. I know we're going to be debuting a behind-the-scenes tour for that boat in particular in the next few months, is something to keep an eye out for. But we really do pay tribute to Higgins and everything he did here at the museum. I know we have an upcoming dinner with a curator coming up soon on Andrew Higgins, if you want to hear a little bit more about his life. And so, you know, we really do take the time to not forget about these New Orleans connections here at the National World War II Museum.
Tell me quickly, recap of what's going to happen on Memorial Day, please.
Absolutely. So our Memorial Day commemoration ceremony is at 11 o'clock. It is free and open to the public. It'll also be live streamed. We'll have a performance by the American Legion Post 377 Band and a special message from Gail Joyce, who has a unique perspective on Memorial Day as someone who has lost both her husband and her son in military service to our country. And so we hope to see you there. And if you're not able to make it in person, that you'll tune in online to just take a moment to remember why we have this holiday weekend.
I should say, Dr. Maggie Hartley, you can't wait to go to work in the morning, can you?
I love it.
I know.
I truly have one of the best jobs.
I can tell it in your voice. I love the National World War II Museum as well. Thank you, Maggie. Dr. Maggie Hartley, Director of Public Engagement, National World War II Museum. Go to national.thenewworld2museum.org. You can get your tickets, plan your trip, find out more. We'll be back in a flash to find out what Noel Norman's got planned for us today here on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.